And now, here's an indie blues double shot from our featured artist today, Dion Bennett. And stay tuned for that interview. It comes up right after these songs.
Me send you deep.
Sugar hip yan ya.
She passed the exam with an A.
Sugar hip yan ya.
Guess what's in her DNA?
Sugar hip yan ya.
Put on the music. She gonna lose it. They call her sugar hip ya. In a downtown flat, she turns up the volume sky high, bop into a low beat track. Everybody knows who's the talk of the town. Daddy back home can't see what is really going down. But on the music, she gonna lose it. Above average,
sugar hip yan yan.
She won't be standing on the sideline. No,
sugar hip yan yan.
She got the game with a double red highline.
Sugar hip yan yan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Put on the music. She gonna lose it. Happy and fancy free. Rolling in a easy seat.
Oh, full-time job.
That was Dionne Bennett from her brand new release, and we've got Dionne on the line right now. Hey, Dionne, how are you?
I'm fine. I've got a little bit of a cold, but I'm okay.
Well, good, good. Now, this is the first time you've come on our show, and we always like to give our fans this opportunity to really get to know who you are, and the best way to do that is by your journey, how you got to where you are today. So give us the story of Dionne Bennett.
Well, I'll give you a little brief overview. Okay, I started singing and performing when I was about 14 and released my first single when I was 15. Then from then onwards, that music was in my blood, basically. I went to a local sort of music program that was running in London. And it was for local up-and-coming young artists. And I just fell in love with being in the studio and singing. And from then, it just gave me the opportunities to work with different people. And that set me on the course to where I am now. So I went off and started to do stage. I did a lot of Aretha Franklin numbers because I was in the Blues Brothers, official Blues Brothers production, and traveled with them for 18 months. And then I haven't looked back, basically. I've been in different outfits, so I've done a lot of diverse work, which includes a lot of Afro-culture influence genres, from jazz to rhythm and blues, as we know, soul, reggae, funk, and rock and roll. Performed throughout Europe and shared the stage with some amazing musicians like Dr. John, supported Maceo Parker, and have recorded with jazz pianist Jason Ribello and jazz saxophonist Tim Garland. I've supported loads of groups as well, Oasis, who played in Cardiff, and basically I met G on the net. He listened to some of my stuff, and then our sort of partnership was born from then.
Okay. every artist that I know has that moment in their life where they had to make that choice between going to college to be an accountant or pursue music as a career. What was that moment that set you on this path?
I think it was definitely when I was about, I don't know, I was very lucky. I mean, I always knew what I wanted to do. I always knew that I wanted to be a musician and be involved with music. I remember when I was 9 years old, I used to have these multiple books upon books where I just write what I thought were brilliant songs and poetry, and I was doing that from 9 years old. I remember fashioning my own microphone by breaking off a headphone and using that and sticking that into the mic socket in one of my my older sister's hi-fi, making that into a microphone and singing along with that. And then, like I said, I where I was growing up in London, which was a place called Deptford, they had this music program called Lewisham Academy of Music. And 13 years old, I stepped in there and walked into a studio, got on the mic, and I never looked back. And I was so lucky that my family were very, very supportive of what I wanted to do, being the baby of the family. So, my brothers and my sisters, they all got to do the sensible route, but I got to be much more artistic, and I had the support to do that.
Okay. I noticed that you also had a career on the BBC program for a kids show. Tell me a little bit.
Okay, that was for CBB, so it's an educational program. It was called the Bobbinogs, and basically I played this character called Bobbin, and we would teach preschoolers give them like positive messages and help them with problem solving. And I played the piano in that, and we sang songs, and just sort of like had this magical world that we lived in, which was brilliant. Actually, I think I was one of the first black characters in a Welsh children's program, so that was really cool. I really enjoyed that. It was really good fun.
Okay.
Now, yeah, but still musical as well, so I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the new release you have out. When you were putting this together, tell me a little bit about how this came together and what were your goals for this?
Okay, for me, it was to branch out into a different genre of music that I had not really delved into before. Obviously, listened to blues, listened to a lot of blues when growing up, and has influenced my style, but it was not something that I actually had the chance to record with other musicians on. And meeting G, and working with G for a few years, it kind of sort of developed organically. And over the you know, with the pandemic going on, we decided, yeah, that this was something that we both would be really interested in doing. He'd be so interested in producing this album for me, and I was excited to be able to actually go into a different direction. I thought it was good for me, you know, growing up in the business, you know, it was a good time for me, I think, to actually kind of mature and do a much more mature style. And yes, I just thought it was, for me, the right move to make, and it's turned out really good. It's just turned out brilliantly, actually, better than I thought. But having G's support there and his production skills has really made it a really fulfilling and exciting project, and I'm so glad to be, you know, to be able to do it.
Now, I know Little G wrote the songs on this, but what was the process that kind of went between you and Little G that helped you decide which songs fit you as an artist?
Well, you know, even when the guys were, you know, in Budapest, actually jamming out the songs and things like, you know, jamming out what the music would be, we'd all worked together for a long time, so we actually knew each other's styles and knew where my vocals lie, what would be the best for me as well. And you know, I had input in that process, as in, you know, was I liking this, was that the right key for me, blah de blah, you know, on that sort of level. And when it came to the lyricism, again, me and G are very close as well, as friends, so it was stuff that, you know, that had come out of conversations with each other. So it's very like close to home, and he really encapsulated a lot of things that that you hear on the album, and coming from my viewpoint, because he knows me so well. And I think that's the best way when you are collaborating with somebody, that you collaborate with somebody that actually understands you, and I think that he captured that.
Yeah. Now let's talk about going in the studio. Now I know you worked with you know, all these hungry musicians, not necessarily hungry, but musicians.
Absolutely.
They may have been hungry, who knows? But working in the studio is a different environment. It's a different world. It's an art form in itself. And, you know, having a good song gives you something to say, but going in the studio gives that song a voice and identity.
Absolutely.
And it also gives you an identity as an artist.
Absolutely.
What was your process that allowed you to capture your sound in the studio?
The process is, you've got to love the songs, you know what I mean? You've got to be totally on board with it for it to sound authentic, for it to be an easier process, and a really a fun one as well. I mean, for me, going in the studio, it was such an amazing place that where we recorded as well, and having, you know, the studio engineers and G there at the same time, just made, you know, you made me feel comfortable. The equipment was absolutely top notch, top of the range. But also, I absolutely love being in the studio. It's one of the places where I thrive. I love it. Sometimes I love it too much, because, you know, it's that time where you want to do things over and over again. So it's good to have like G's there, G's saying, you know, no more, because I would literally stay in there and try and perfect everything and go over and over and over. But my process really was, you know, I was totally connected with the songs. Like I said, I played with these musicians before we actually did the album, And so hearing their musicianship, just, you know, I just floated away with it, just totally connected. So it wasn't it was such an easy process for me to do it. So we went in there and we did it in 2 days. It was amazing, every single minute.
Nice. Okay. Now, you know, we've been in the digital revolution now for over 20 years. And it has redefined the music industry several times over. I know here in the States, I mean, you can't buy a car with a CD player in it.
That's right.
The consumer now doesn't look at music, recorded music anyway, as a product. They look at it as a service. It's available on their phone. They can pretty much bring up anything that's been recorded in the last 100 years at a flick of a finger. How has this shift in consumer perception of recorded music affected you as an artist?
I think for me, it's a double-edged sword, really. I mean, it's great that you've got access to all this music, but I think sometimes there's that disconnect from, you know, going into an actual record shop or going in there and having a physical copy of something. I think that's still a beautiful thing, and I think people still miss that. You know, there's been this whole sort of uptake of vinyl again, and I think that shows why people do still want that, you know, tangible thing of having music in their hand. But also it's good for, you know, independent artists, because they're able to actually get their music out there, and it's not, you know, it can be also in their own hands. But again, then you've got, you know, when it comes down to streaming, the unfairness of it as well, with the money and how it's actually distributed back to the artist. It's a hard one, you know. For me, it's a great way where I can actually jump on, and I'm finding artists from all over the world far more easier than I could have 10, 15 years ago. But you know what I mean, it's great in that respect. And also, you know, like I said, for the independent artist, you can build up your portfolio in that way. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, really. And I think, you know, every month, or, you know, even sometimes every day, there's something new to be found. And, you know, technology is changing all the time, but this is the future. This is the way that, you know, as artists, this is how we actually reach our audience now. So
right,
it's something that we have to embrace.
It's definitely not going anywhere.
No, it's not.
The consumer has embraced this technology as a way to consume music. So we now have to look at it and say, okay, now how can we monetize this? How can we make this to our advantage? And
that's right.
One of the things I noticed, when the pandemic hit, a lot of independent artists started to go on to the internet, go on social media.
That's right.
Started doing live streams from their living rooms, from their bedrooms, from their porches. Yeah. And the fans got this unique look at the artist in their own environment, in their own home. And they started to relate to the artist on a more personal basis. This world of content creation and social media has brought the fan-artist connection together.
Definitely.
More than it ever has been in the past. And I think the pandemic has accelerated this. You know, you have, like, Tim McGraw would find people on TikTok that were covering his songs.
Yeah.
He would do a duet with them and comment on how much he loves their voice and great arrangement or whatever the case may be. You know, David Grohl is up there doing drum battles with an 11-year-old.
Yeah, that was brilliant. I love that. You know,
well, that's the thing, is now you as a fan now look at David Grohl differently.
Definitely.
You know?
Absolutely. I mean, it's become, you know, you're making the artist much more of a real person again, if you see what I mean, you know? Before, you know, when you've got this massive machine around an artist, it's all smoke and mirrors, a lot of it, you know? But when it came down to the pandemic, people started wanting something less of the flashiness and more of the realness. And I think that's what, you know, people always want and always will search out authentic things, people, and music. And I think, you know, with the whole of pandemic, you have to see a silver lining, even though how terrible it has been and affected people in so many adverse ways, that for the artists, you know, especially for the independent artists as well, that content creation helped you build an audience that I think will sustain you. Because they've got this real connection with you, and you know, you can actually, and a lot of artists were speaking about, you know, not just the music. I think that was another thing as well that's been a great thing, that you're not just talking about the music, you're talking about other things, other aspects of your life that connect you to your audience as well, just making you more, just humanizing you.
Well, you know what I think what's happened is that the product has shifted from the music to the brand.
Yes, most definitely.
You know,
most definitely
is now the new product for the independent artist.
Absolutely,
because and that so, ties yeah. into their merchandise. It ties in.
It's true.
The product that they bring to the market. That
it's
brand
true.
Is what people are attaching to.
Absolutely, I think you're absolutely right. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah, that is exactly what it is. And sometimes it can be even secondary, the music, to what that brand is saying to a person. But that's the thing that connects, you know, the same way that, you know, I'll buy the same kind of washing powder that I've always had, I've connected to that. It's the same thing now with an artist. You're connecting with the things that they're saying, not just what the music that they're playing. And I think that's a very important shift in how an artist actually does connects with a growing audience and an audience of today.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I think that that's where we're heading in the future. I think in the future,
yeah.
the new platform that we're going to see is going to be something that creates a digital bubble. You know,
uh-huh.
they're talking about the metaverse. They're talking about, you know,
yeah.
Web3, where you're not mm-hmm. going to be on the internet. You're going to be in the internet. What's going to happen in the future is that every artist is going to have their own digital world or digital bubble.
Yeah.
That they're going to have this content. And when people enter this world, they're going to connect with that artist. They're going to be part of that tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's exciting because it's a new way of actually, you know, delivering your art, delivering your music, and connecting with your audience. But it's also kind of scary for an artist that, you know, sometimes you just want to go out and play, you know. But sometimes you've got to put all these hats on now. You know, you've got to be all these things to actually be seen as an artist now. And that can be quite strenuous, and that can be quite, you know, off-putting sometimes, because you have to be up on your social media. You have to have all that, you know, you have to be always constantly creating and giving new, putting out new content. So that can also weigh heavy when all you want to do is make music. So, like I said, double-edged sword there.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I read an article about how Nike copyrighted their right to sell virtual sneakers.
That's right. I read that. Yes. Yes, I did read that.
Now think about this a little bit. If Nike can sell virtual sneakers to avatars, why can't an independent artist sell virtual T-shirts with their brand?
Well, yeah. Absolutely, there's nothing, there's no, no way, there's no reason why not to.
Right.
There isn't. There isn't.
You know, this whole world of tangibility has uh-huh. kind of missed it away to just having even a digital version of, you know, the T-shirt to wear on your avatar as you walk through virtual worlds. You know,
exactly.
And again, it runs back to the brand.
It does.
You know,
it does.
That, you know, that, wow, you know, I get to wear that brand on my shirt in the
mm-hmm.
virtual world.
Exactly. But then again, like I'm saying, it's, you know, it's like you've got to be so many things now. You've got to think of so many different things rather than, you know, before it was getting up there, knowing what you're going to be playing and going out there and playing. It's now like, you know, if you've got the know-how, it is about this digital world. So it can be quite daunting, but also an exciting way and a new way of actually monetizing what you do.
Now, you know, we had mentioned earlier, you know, before we started recording about the whole world of NFTs, and I know you're not totally familiar what's happening, but
no,
it kind of all ties into this whole world of the non-fungible token and cryptocurrency,
yes,
because that's going to be the fuel that really kind of drives this new world.
I guess where, so, yes, it's true, yeah.
You know, and that's kind of the new market that's going to allow the independent artist to kind of take control.
And take that control, yeah, yeah.
You know, a monetization funnel that actually has something that they can now sell and could be resold. Because,
yes,
you know,
that's
one
right
of the things that NFTs allow you to do is that you can create it in such a way that once it's resold, you get a commission on every resale.
Yeah, so it's something to do with like blockchain, isn't it? And
yes.
Yeah, every time. Yeah, that's right, correct.
Yeah, it's called a smart contract. That
if, uh-huh,
let's
okay
say you put up a song and someone buys it for $100 and then
uh-huh
turns around and sells it for $200,
you
can put a thing in your in the NFT that
uh-huh
gives you a commission on every time it resells.
Well, that's brilliant, yeah.
You know, so
I like that.
Constant, you know, as it becomes a collectible that's
yes
sold and resold, you always yes get a commission on every
uh-huh
sale.
Uh-huh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a brand new, brave new world. And I like, yeah, the idea of that, but also putting it back into the hands of the artist, making sure that they always, you know, they are getting their fair due, because we all know, you know, especially with these streaming sites, that you know the artist hasn't been, you know, being paid as well as they should be. So I'm kind of on board with that, most definitely.
Okay. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
Talking to you. And
a pleasure talking to you.
An Indie Blues Double Shot from your new release. You guys out there, you may just want to turn it up loud, open the windows, call the neighbors. We're going to have some fun.
Sun over at the Carter Docks, my life. Cargo ships going by, seabirds are flying high, my life. How many less cigarettes do we have at the Hanson Jacks, my life? The man who took me out, left me with a chick from Stroud, my life. Back and forth, looking for the right harbor, my life. My mind is so confused, this fear of being you, my life. Dreaming how things used to be, nothing less is clear to see, my life. Joking back, I'm coming.
comfortable to leave the dead in my life.
don't have to talk so much when you got yourself a style. Get style, ya, 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 ya.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Get style, ya, 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 ya.
Oh, get yourself some style, I say. Get style,
ya, 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 ya.
Hey, come on, get yourself love.
Bass man.
gonna rock these shades, gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey, gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist looking to take their career to the next level, or you're a fan that just loves to discover new artists and new original music, Making a Scene has exactly what you're looking for. For the indie artist, we have articles on music business, gear reviews, recording techniques, and interviews with industry professionals. For the fan, we introduce you to new artists every day with our in-depth artist interviews and insightful CD reviews. Nobody gives you more. Making a Scene truly is the number one resource for the indie artist and the fans that love them. Go to makingascene.org and become part of the indie revolution.
Shout now, honey!